Blog Talk Radio.
Another show on a Wednesday night on a rainy night here in the Tampa Bay area. Probably it's beautiful up in the Northeast. Another edition of Sports Night brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. Give Tim Baker a call, 352-588-5454. And the Abbey course for me and Mr. Henderson should have played while he was down. We do it next time when he comes back in the fall, 352-588 2016. Gentlemen, we're going to donate. We're going to make a special honor of this program to Marty St. Louis' mother, which I knew briefly. We're going to have this program in honor of her. I emailed my boss down there, Bill Wicker, to tell we're going to do the program. Email me back. Said Marty, we should be very, very happy about it. I'd like to welcome our Philadelphia legend, Mr. Don Henderson, and Atlanta legend, Mr. Roger Hendler. Don, good news down here in Tampa. 2-0. Over Seattle right now, finishing up this game. Grant Belford looking real good. And welcome aboard, gentlemen. Another Wednesday night. Fun on a Wednesday
Tommy,
night.
Tommy, yeah. We're also going to dedicate this program to Jenny Doyle, an outstanding athlete at Archbishop Ryan High School.
Ooh.
Up in Philadelphia, later matriculated and as an A student and basketball player at Richmond University, and was killed over the weekend in an air balloon. And also Mrs.
So he was one of the coaches, or he was
yes,
the
he was.
Pilot.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
No!
Was he the pilot?
Yeah. No, she was with the pilot, but she wasn't the pilot.
He was one of the two coaches that was on there.
Right, and also Victoria Denenberg, who for years was the archivist for NFL Films in Philadelphia.
Sure, by all means, if they're in a better spot, we are gentlemen, and in my half, like the show of Marty St. Louis' mom. And have you saw, guys, you see that Ranger game last night, and everybody came up to Marty St. Louis, the and the handshake line. Such a special thing when I saw Marty and the tears from he's holding back the tears and he knew Pittsburgh so well when he played with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And isn't it ironic, 10 years ago, it was Marty St. Louis assisting Brad Richards on one of the Lightning's go-ahead game-winning goals and against the Calgary Flames eventually won the Cup. So it's pretty ironic. 10 years ago, Marty's still doing the same thing. Great news from Seattle. Rays 2-0 shutout. Grant Belfour gets a save. Jake Odorizzi gets to win. And later on in the program, we're going to have Rick Vaughn up for the Tampa Bay Rays PR staff. He always enjoys coming on the program. So they'll be looking forward, especially 2 out of 3 in Seattle, guys.
I'll tell you, that is a great move. But more importantly, that Ranger come from behind 3-1 was just remarkable. And, of course, this afternoon, the coach of the Ranger was on quite a period of time on the Fan and talked about what happened in game number 4, one of the most embarrassing games for the Rangers, and then the team meeting that they had, and, of course, the come-together when Marty St. Louis' mother passed away and he came out and decided to play, and how that brought the team together. And, of course, what a tremendous win last night. And not only a tremendous win, but the coach was talking about the fact that, which I was totally unaware of, that going into last night's game, 17 out of 19 games were played, the team that scored the first goal won.
Yeah,
now it's 18 out of 20.
Right. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome a good friend of the program that's doing a great job with your Tampa Bay Storm, Coach Lawrence Samuels. Lawrence, you'll be going by our neck of the woods this weekend and then. And Ben, when you get in there Friday, Ben wants to go to Independence Hall. So as you're real close to the Cradle of Liberty and the City of Brotherly Love, you'll be playing the Philadelphia Soul. Lawrence, welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, guys. How you doing this afternoon?
Yes.
Well, we're doing great. And how was your week off? Is everything going smoothly now, looking at going to Philadelphia?
Well, I didn't have a week off. I didn't take the week off. I worked through the week.
You had a lot of roster changes, I can tell you that, or several.
Yeah, and we got a lot of new faces, a lot of new guys in. We need a spark somewhere right now, but the guys are very upbeat coming up off the bye week, and I think that benefits us because we were pretty banged up going into the bye week. So hopefully we can get things back on track with a lot of healthy bodies.
Well, I'm sure you will. Plus, you're playing the Philadelphia Soul up there, and that so you. You know, that's all our neck of the woods up there, Lawrence. So,
I know.
When you fly in and fed off International Airport, I think if you look off to the left side, you'll be seeing tires in the Delaware River. So you got to tell me about that next week.
All right.
Hey, Lawrence.
Good.
I don't
know if you look up in the press box, you got to see Ron Jaworski. I know that.
That's great.
Don't forget, Tommy, you also
to be a quarterback. But I wanted to ask you, was it you that lost a player to the Montreal Alouettes or did the Soul? Well, I think one of the teams did.
We lost the guy. We lost our guy that was leading in the secondary and interceptions, Chris Smith.
Okay,
he actually signed a Canadian League deal. So we lost the guy, but this, we always have a rule on our team is if one guy leaves, then it's another guy that gets the opportunity and steps up.
Right.
We're just going to fill those shoes and keep going and trying to get better.
Thoughts about Philadelphia up there. You looked them on tape up there. It's a very hostile environment up there, especially the Philadelphia fans up there and that. So what's the key? Tell us key for a victory offensively, defensively on Saturday night, which I'm going to stay here, guaranteed a win. It's a new season right now, the second half of the season, Lawrence. I guarantee a win and beat the crap out of that logo for me.
the key for us is on offense is to take care of our quarterback. Last week, we lost our starting quarterback. So what we're going to do this week is we're going to narrow a lot of things that we do down and just try to execute. Execution is the key, taking care of the football, no turnovers. Defensively, we know we're going up against a high-powered offense. So They've gotten things back on track since the last time we faced them. So we're really looking forward to the challenge on defense. We're going to do a lot of different things and some things that they're familiar that we did last time, but we're going to do some different things and keep them in front of us and actually be physical. And that's our plan on defense.
I was going to say, this is your second look at Philadelphia because you beat them down there, right? Now you got a chance to play them in their backyard.
That's right. That's right. And then we get to play these guys three times out of this year. So this is a big game for us because we get the leg up on them if we can win both of these games.
Well, I'm sure we will, Lawrence, because it's a second season. The first half's over with. This starts in the whole new second half of the season. The way we started, the way we did first half of the year, we're gonna be fine making the playoffs up there in that night. And I still got that gut feeling, Lawrence, when I was with the DBs today. I love that when they come out and go woo like that. Every time we do that, we're very successful. That's a good luck charm, Lawrence.
That's right. And they're very upbeat, you know. The guys are very upbeat. They're fresh, you know, coming off a bye week and had a lot of rest. You know, that benefits us. You know, the Philadelphia, they had a game last week. So, you know, hopefully we can be a little bit fresher than they are, get up there, get off our feet on Friday, get into our team meetings, pay attention to detail on all phases of the game, and get ready to go out and play a perfect game. We hadn't played a perfect game since the last time we played Philadelphia, so hopefully we can go up and repeat what we did the first time.
How does the quarterback situation look, Lawrence, you know, after you lost him last week?
Well, the good thing is that, you know, we had a benefit of the bye week, which I met with BJ at least 4 days out of the 5 days out of the regular work week. Mm-hmm. And I got a chance to prepare him for 2 weeks now, so he should be game ready. We got a light to look at two young guys come in, Brendan Crawford and Samuel Lemieux, and which they did a great job. Both guys competed for the backup job. I think we're going to go with the Brendan Crawford guy.
Mm-hmm.
Played out of Langston University, and he did very well this year. And he's a really young guy, about 24 years old, but he's very skilled. Has some arena experience, so he did really well in practice, and if need be, he can step in right now because I think he's already game ready. Just when the week, this week of preparation.
That's good news.
That's fit, especially
sure.
As I heard all week, Lawrence, and once again, the play of Omari and Joe Hills, or those guys are great bookends we have.
Oh yeah, you know, and any time we get our veterans healthy. We'll have Tolliver back this week, so that's a plus. So we have all our weapons back, and hopefully we can put enough weapons around whoever plays quarterback. If we put enough weapons around them and just get the ball in those guys' vicinity, they'll be able to make plays. And we've all seen them do that before. So all we have to do is take care of the ball, get it to our playmakers, and I think we'll be okay.
It's going to be a great trip up there and that. So, I mean, I had to give directions to Ben today because you guys are staying out in New Jersey. And I was telling Frank before the program, it says, where do they get off at? Go to the PAPCO High Speed Line. You get off at 5th and Market right down. He wants to see the Liberty Bell on Friday. So I told him the directions, and hopefully he comes on and Frank can tell him the better directions.
Tommy has also authorized all you guys to go out and have a nice meal on him and just send him the bill personally.
Okay. we'll do
at Pack States.
just call 1-800. Call Nicky up. He'll take care of it for you up there.
Don't get messed up. Go on to Tony Luke's or any of those places. Get right either to Pat's or Gino's and get the real Philadelphia steak.
That's don't
right.
Even bother going. Just tell them to send them to your hotel, as many as they
there
can.
There you go. It's on time. What do we care?
It was funny because I said to Ben today when you get off the airport, they always have those. Remember those rocking chairs, those big rocking chairs. That hopefully he'll bring back a Daily News for us, so Frank and I can read it down the next Storm game Saturday night. So hopefully he can remember that for us. It'd be great.
All right.
But, oh, I guess, Frank, we have a mystery guest on there, or we haven't got a hold of a mystery guest yet? I don't. Frank?
Right. Oh, Frank, yeah. Frank deserted.
You know, I'll tell you, while we're waiting for Frank, I'll tell you
sure.
a real quick story. You fellas know Harvey Green, the tremendous VP of public relations
yes.
for the Dolphins. And previous to that, as Don and I are well aware, the head of PR for the New York Yankees with George Steinbrenner, and he lived to talk about it, you know, and to another day. One time when the Dolphins were playing the Eagles, Harvey went to Penn. So, you know, before the game, you were probably
dinner.
There, Don. You may remember this. He couldn't get anybody to go to Pat's or Geno's with him on Saturday night from the hotel, so he went by himself. And I said, you couldn't get anybody to go with you over there to 9th and Passyunk? He says, no. So he says, but I caught a cab, and we had the cab wait while I got it, made it in the cab on the way back.
Well, Lawrence, best of luck to you for this coming Saturday night. When you see that logo of Bradford White, just kick it for me, because I know we're going to come out of there with a big W, and I'm going to call the company up there, so we're going to come out with a big W. It was no calm before the storm, Lawrence, and I'm guaranteed a W for this Saturday night.
Go, go on.
That's right, buddy.
Hey, we got a guest.
Yeah, we have our number one cheerleader here. Just hold a second.
No, I'm not here. I'm a cheer manner. Go, go on.
Oh, there we go, Lawrence. We're all
set
down there.
Hey, Lawrence, David. Just remember, Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love, so they want to show you a lot of love and a win.
Yes.
Right.
Travel safe up there and that, and we're going to come home with a W, and we're going to get ready for Jacksonville next Saturday night, Lawrence. Always a pleasure, sir. Travel safe and have a great time in the city.
All right, buddy, I will. And I'll be sure to remind Ben about getting that daily news part.
There you go.
Thank you.
Take care, Lawrence, and thank you very much, and best of luck on Saturday.
All right, guys. I'll talk to
yeah,
you later.
Good luck, Coach.
Yes.
All right,
welcome to the program, a real good friend of mine. We got to get him on that golf course. Buck's got to start having these stupid mini camps, Mr. Cummings. I like to walk in Roy Cummings of the Tampa Tribune. Roy, I mean, they got to start having this stuff. We got to start, me, you, and I, we got the birds and everything else been saying, get out and start hitting me around. Hit the ball, hit me around now.
Tell you what, the NFL doesn't care about my golf game, or I don't think it really cares much about it. I don't really think it cares much about its own game, to be honest with you. You know, this whole thing now of this talk, and I think it's very serious, about keeping the draft in May and maybe even extending it to 4 days, that talk is not sitting real well with a lot of the coaches around the
right.
league because, you know, what it is the scouts and stuff, you know, this is another 2 weeks or 3 weeks, depending on how long it is, that they're out working every day trying to, you know,
right.
get their draft boards together. The NFL is a culture where the theory is with most everybody, I'd say almost more, well over 90% of the people involved in the game, that if you have any downtime, if you're not spending it looking at film or doing something, or as they say, trying to get better, you're getting worse. And the pressure is on everybody to just keep on working, even if you're not making any progress. You know, they just want you on the, you know, it's like a gerbil on a treadmill. It's just, if you're doing something, well, then they're happy because they think you're working and doing
right.
something right. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't believe
right.
in that theory at all. But, you know, so what you've got is, you know, a situation where, and you know what, a couple of teams actually did this, and I'm proud for them for doing it. A couple of teams told their scouts about 2 weeks before the draft, hey, take a week off. Just go home, forget about it, clear your heads. We'll come back and work on it, the final week before the draft. Because, all you know, the hay's in the barn. And at some point, you reach a point of diminishing returns. And that's why I think it's an issue. And that's why I say, Tommy, the NFL could care less, certainly about my golf game and any free time that I get. And that's fine. I understand that. But the problem is they don't really care much about the well-being of the people that play their game.
Yes.
Roy, one thing before we get to your individual information on the players selected, what you think. All that is well and good, but the television rating dictates that this is the greatest first night of NFL draft coverage they've ever had, not only by a couple of points, but by a tremendous margin. And that's when it really swung. The next day after the opening night, that's when the conversation began. Well, now we've got to keep it where it is because the television people want it there.
Yeah, you're right. And I look, I don't know how much of an impact Johnny Manziel had on all this. That was the real draw. Because you had people all throughout the country. You had them in Tampa. You had them in Cleveland. You had them in Jacksonville. You had them in Oakland. You had people throughout the nation. You know, just look around the map, and everywhere there was an interest in where Johnny Manziel was going. Certainly you had it in Texas.
And you had him with John Gruden, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And my point is, so everybody's tuning in for those, you know, for those first couple hours to see where Johnny Manziel went. And the drama just got greater and greater the further he dropped. There's some talk out there about whether the NFL actually talks to some teams about making sure somebody drafted Michael Sam. And that's another issue, and we'll get on that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if the NFL talked to the first 12 or 14 teams and said, hey, none of you guys take Manziel because we need him to hang around. We need a drawing card, and we need this kid to be it. You know, I doubt that happened, but if there's a conspiracy theorist out there, there's a great conspiracy for you because you know what? The longer he hung around sitting at that table with his jacket off and a lost look on his face, the more intriguing that draft became. Nobody cared much about the players who were actually being drafted. Mm. They cared about where that guy was going and who was going to finally get him. And it became more and more dramatic as time moved on. So that I don't know how much that has to do with the ratings. My guess is it probably added a point or two, but even if that's all it added, you know, you're still looking at fives and almost sixes on that rating scale, and that's better than the NHL did, better than the NBA did, might have been better than American Idol for all we know. So pretty strong viewership there.
You know, well, just as a follow-up to what you were talking about with the schedule, you know, with the scouts and everything, I did hear one of the general managers on Sirius NFL Radio talk about that schedule and what he did with his people. Might not have given them a week off, but he gave them weekends off. What they did was they stretched out their entire schedule so it was just like it was in the past, even though it was a couple of weeks later. So he said that they did get some weekends off, which they didn't get. Now, just to follow up on Manziel, what I was interested to see was, I'm a big fan of Connor Shaw, as you know. And he was taken by Cleveland as an undrafted rookie. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see whether he can even do anything with Cleveland or whether they just got him, you know, to be, you know, like a training camp quarterback when they need additional quarterback.
What do you think? Good question. It's a very good question because, you know, the funny thing about what a lot of people don't realize about these rookie mini camps is, you know, you draft 6 or 8 or 10 players, whatever it might be, and in order for those guys to get out there and actually play and get a read on where they're at and, you know, how much of the system they can pick up in 24 or 48 hours and, you know, what they look like in shorts and get them acclimated to how you want to practice and stuff, you got to have another 45 guys out there. So in order for that to work, you got to go out and you got to try, you know, have what they call a tryout camp. And it's good for some guys. It's an opportunity. But a lot of these guys are signed to these, signed as undrafted free agents and brought in for these tryout camps. They're really just roster fillers, guys, and you know that. But this is all about making sure that the Manziels of the world, and in the case here in Tampa, the Mike Evans of the world, have somebody either to throw the ball to or get it from or hit or whatever. So, it's a good question. I don't know where Connor Shaw is, what his status really is. It can't be high. I mean, they've got a quarterback in Hoyer and they've got a guy in Manziel that apparently is the future whenever that may come. So I guess maybe he's looking at a third spot. But, hey, you know what? If you can put anything on tape at all, if you can impress some people, maybe he gets to stick for a little bit. What you shoot for if you're a kid like that, you shoot for an opportunity to at least get to training camp. If you can get to training camp, you shoot for an opportunity maybe to make the practice squad. If you can do that, then you got people looking at you. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, and also if somebody gets injured with another team, it gives you that opportunity too because, you know, he had a tremendous record at South Carolina and was very well prepared for the NFL because you know, he was with Spurrier. And Spurrier has always had a good job with that.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree. A lot of ability in that kid, and I think he's got a future. We'll have to wait and see where it is, but you know, it could be 3, 4, 5 years before he really surfaces somewhere.
Sure.
But
you're right.
You know, you got to start somewhere, and you know, I'm glad that he at least got the opportunity or is getting the opportunity to throw the ball around a little bit. He may outplay Johnny Manziel in that camp. I don't know if the Browns would ever admit it, but he just might do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing that they spent a lot of time with during the draft was talking about how the quarterbacks kept dropping. I think that also had a little bit of interest for the people that were football fans, but not necessarily draft fans, but they wanted to stay along to see where these quarterbacks were going to go.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, in a quarterback-driven league, those are always the guys that usually get the most interest. Jadeveon Clowney, I mean, that drama was over right away. Sammy Watkins' drama was over pretty quickly. The Michael Sam stuff was hanging on, but I think everybody knew that was going to be at best a second-day story, if not a third, and it turned out to be a third. So you're right, the quarterbacks become the story. And you know what? Again, you know, sometimes you wonder, does the NFL really kind of stir this pot? Because, you know, every scout that I talk to, you know, if you really, if you looked at it objectively about the quarterbacks in this draft, from Blake Bortles, who was taken first, right on down to the Connor Shaws of the world, and obviously including the, you know, you know, the Manziels, everybody's a developmental quarterback, meaning most, I'd say 75% of the teams in the league believe that every one of these guys is going to need at least a year of tutelage before he's ready to step in. And, you know, that's why these quarterbacks were dropping. You know, the thinking out there by the draft picks, so to speak, you know, the guys who put together mock drafts and all that other stuff, most of whom, you know, missed horribly throughout the whole thing. They've got quarterbacks listed high, and, you know, some of them got 3, 4, 5 going in the first round. It's like, wait a minute, they're not going to go there because they're not that good. They're young college kids coming out as juniors, a lot of them. Most of these guys probably would have, you know, done much better to stay in school another year, the way Aaron Murray did last year, and unfortunately for him, he got hurt. But, you know, they're not ready to step in. Therefore, you're not going to take a guy with the 17th pick, the 4th pick, you know, that kind of thing. So that's why they were dropping. And you're right. But that did add to the drama because it has become a quarterback-driven league. So that's where the drama lies right there.
How about the quarterback out of Jacksonville? I mean, they picked that guy. I mean, I think he's the best quarterback in the draft, Roy. He's 6'4", 240. Reminds me like a Ben Roethlisberger, like a big standing quarterback in that situation up there. And I saw a couple of him put him on film. He drops back so quick. He got a great release. I think he's going to be a superstar in the NFL.
Well, obviously the Jacksonville Jaguars agree with you since they took him 3rd overall. I don't know. Again, I still think he's a developmental guy. Blake Bortles, I think, you know, still has a lot of work to do. There's a lot of technical stuff that he's got to work on, but he's got some of the raw skills. And you know what? That's one of the things you absolutely look for in a quarterback. You know, does he have the arm? Does he have the release? Does he have the size? You know, the other stuff can be taught. And, you know, does he have the makeup to be a leader? Does he have the you know, the wherewithal to work through it, you know, that kind of thing. So you have the mental makeup, you know, is he a gym rat? You know, that's what you want, and he's got all those things. So the rest of the stuff, you know, if it takes a year or even two for him to develop, you know, certainly Jacksonville needed a player at that position. They had it seems forever. So I thought they made a good call there. I certainly didn't question it at all.
How about last
Roy, how about the hometown team? You cover them all the time. And how did you feel at the end of their draft?
Well, I really liked it, to be honest with you. I really liked the first pick. I think I told you guys a week ago that I'd done some mock drafts up to that point, and about 5 of them, and in every one of them, I took Mike Evans as the first pick for the Buccaneers, even when Johnny Manziel was sitting there. I know it upset a lot of fans here in Tampa that they passed on Johnny Manziel, and then I even heard people saying they were upset that they didn't trade up to get him. There's a reason they did that. You know, and the reason is Mike Glennon. I don't know why people don't like Mike Glennon, and if anybody on this panel, you know, is one of those, I'm willing to hear what you have to say, but my opinion is this kid, you know, he's got all, again, as we talked about, all those items that you want to check off, you know, for a quarterback, you know, size, arm strength, release, you know, mental makeup, is he a gym rat, all this stuff. He checks all those boxes. The only box that Mike Glennon doesn't check is the mobility box. And he's mobile enough in the pocket. We saw that last year to get himself out of trouble when he has to, and he'll get better. And he'll develop that internal clock in his head to make sure that he can get out of those situations when he has to, I believe. And, you know, those 13 games of experience, that's pretty important. So it was never a surprise to me that the Bucks passed on a quarterback, certainly at number 7, or at all. I predicted that would happen. And I like the pick at number 7 in Mike Evans. I think what they're clearly trying to do here is replicate what Josh McCown had in Chicago with Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall last year. And also they're kind of riding the wave of what's become a bit of a new trend in the NFL where teams are starting to go for these big receivers and throw these, you know, they want to throw these back shoulder fade passes, you know, just jump the ball up. And my guy at 6'5 can certainly outjump your guy at 5'9 or 5'10. The average cornerback in the NFL is 5'10. You're going to win that battle most of the time. So I liked what they did there. And then they got even bigger when they added the tight end out of Washington in Safarian Jenkins. I like that pick just as much because, as I said before, and I'm pretty sure I told you guys this, that if Evans wasn't my pick at number 7, Eric Ebron would have been, because I thought tight end was arguably their, certainly their third most biggest need after the receiver, and probably behind guard, but you can almost make the argument that it was the second biggest need because they just don't have a dynamic player there. They've got a couple of contributors in Tim Wright and Brandon Myers, but they don't have a dynamic guy, a potential dynamic guy.
There's a lot of NFL people that I've listened to on NFL radio. They are very high on Glennon. They agree with you 100%.
Yeah, and I think that's why the rumors came out. Now, I believe there's some validity to them, that that other teams were calling about Mike Glennon, that they were interested in him as an option. There was talk about possibly making a trade. I believe teams did call the Buccaneers and wanted to know what was, you know, if he was available. And I think they found out at one point that, well, he's not necessarily available unless, of course, you want to give us, you know, the, you know, part of the farm. And, you know, I think my guess is that they were probably saying, at the very least, a third-round pick and this year. Not a third-round pick next year, not a fourth. I think the least the Bucks would have accepted for Mike Glennon was probably a third-round pick this year, and I think that probably was just a little bit too rich in such a deep draft for a quarterback that most teams probably didn't see as their starter right away. They probably see in the way the Bucks do, wanting to spend some time developing. But, I think you guys are right. I think there's a lot of teams out there that look at Mike Glennon and say, I'll take that guy for sure.
Because Mike Glennon is a good young quarterback, good football head on his shoulders. And Roy, during the offseason, watching the, you know, I was doing the Storm training camp and Storm preview of Skyway Park. Guess who I saw in the next field? Mike Glennon working out with a couple of the receivers out there. This is in his old time. And they really got me thinking, wow, this Mike Glennon could be, it's good, it's a real good young kid who wants to play the game of football, wants to represent Tampa Bay. And the people get on Mike Glennon, like you said before, just irritate me. He played in a tough system, Greg Schiano. He got thrown in the fire, what happened to poor Josh Friedman. And he did a great job coming out of that, Roy. I thought he had a great year last year. Great year learned from Lovie Smith, new offensive coordinator, and great things for Mike Glennon this year.
I've said it many times. The key numbers to me are the ratio of touchdown passes to interceptions.
Right.
19
right.
touchdown passes, 9 interceptions. That's an indication. When you're playing in a difficult situation on a team that has nothing, virtually nothing to play for, and the offense just continually is deteriorating around you as the season goes on, and you come up with those kind of numbers, that's an indication to me that you can make good, solid decisions and make plays when you have to on the field on Sundays. And, you know, I think that's the thing that people saw most. Again, you know, prototype, he's got a lot of the elements that you want in the prototype quarterback, the size, the arm. You know, the intelligence, the gym rat. As you said, Tommy, you see him out there working out on his own. That's what you want out of that kid. But when you put him in the fire, that's when it's the real test. And when he got tested last year, he actually did pretty well. You know, he's one of the highest-rated rookie quarterbacks of all time, certainly in the last 10 years. I think only RG3 had a better rookie season than he did. So, you know what? Kid's doing pretty good, and I think the Buccaneers realized that rather quickly. And you know, they did their due diligence by looking at all the other quarterbacks in this draft and fielding offers and, you know, listening to people. And, you know, I suppose if someone had offered up a second-round pick for him or certainly a first, then they might have been quite tempted to move him. But, you know, my guess is nobody offered any much more than a third, and it was probably next year's.
Well, how about
going down the line, Roy, and the rest of the picks? Because everybody seems to think they did well, as you just said.
Yeah, a curious pick in the third round, picking Charles Sims, a running back. But I don't have a problem with it, and here's why. Jason Light said prior to the draft, and we're going to, you know, he didn't say we're going to do this, but he almost suggested that this was going to happen. That, you know, there's a very good chance we can make some picks that people won't understand at the time, because your needs in September are different than your needs now. Right now, running back doesn't look like a need. But, you know, 4 or 5 months from now, it may be a real need. And not only that, but this kid Charles Sims is a real good pass catcher. And I think what the Bucs have in mind, and again, we haven't seen the offense yet, but my guess is that they have some ideas in mind for him strictly as a pass catcher out of the backfield, or maybe even, you know, spreading out wide into the slot or something like that. He's got great hands. I don't know if he's going to become a receiver, but he's going to be a pass catcher primarily, I think, in this offense. And that's another – you know what? You just added another weapon. So I don't have a problem with that. Clearly the guards weren't there that they wanted in the second and third rounds. I think they certainly would have picked one in that range had they been there, but they weren't. They had no fourth-round pick. These are the fifth-rounders on a guard, Kadeem Edwards, and then a tackle out of Purdue – Kevin Pamphill, who, to me, when you think of that kid, think of DeMar Dotson. I don't think the Bucs believe it's going to take 5 years for this guy to develop and become a starter. They certainly hope not, but he is a developmental player, so is Kadeem Edwards. But they're pieces that, you know, 2-3 years down the road could really pay off, and then you add another receiver in Robert Heron at the end of the draft, another speed guy. This is one of the things that Lovie Smith has made very clear. If you're listening and reading between the lines, he mentioned speed a lot, guys. He really wants his team to be fast, and at least two of the picks in this draft are pretty much all about speed, and Mike Evans can certainly run it too. So they're a faster team now, and I think they're a better team. I like the draft a lot.
That's fantastic. Roy, change gears real quick. What about Marty St. Louis? His poor mom passed away, a dedicated show to his mom. And guess who assisted on a game-winning goal? A la 2004 Marty to Brad Richards. That's such a great game last night.
I'll tell you what, there's no loss of former Lightning players in these playoffs. You know, last night, not only do you have Marty and Richie, you know, you got Dominic Moore in there, you got Benoit Pouliot, you got Jussi Jokinen. I mean, you know, you can find Lightning players throughout these playoffs. Right. It makes you wonder if this team had just held on to some guys, maybe they'd still be in the second round. So, you know, it was nice to see that Marty bounce back. But to me, the best thing about it is it gives the Lightning a first-round pick this year and another first next year. So, to me, that was the reason I was primarily rooting for the Rangers last night. Except, I mean, I love Dominic Moore. I love Richie. You know, my opinion of Marty has changed a lot since we heard about what happened with him here in Tampa. But you know what? I was pulling for those Rangers last night. I'm anxious now to see. Right now I got the Bruins and the Canadians on, and boy, oh boy, I'll tell you what, Rangers against either one of those teams is going to be good. But all of a sudden, Montreal's up 1-0 here, and this game matters. So winners going home, losers going home.
I like the old days. We would play a round of golf with Rick Peckham, the Chief, Ira, myself, and Martin and Emily. Then we go up back to watch the game at a local establishment. Those were the days, Roy.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
The golf.
Hey guys,
was great.
Breaking news, by the way, and I don't know if I'm breaking it to you, but suddenly the Rays have won 2 in a row.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God! Great pitching performance up there by David last night. And Jake Odorizzi, but the bullpen, Jake McGee, Grant Belfour, look great up there. And Roy, it is still early in the season for baseball. We all know that. And when Alex Cobb comes back a week from tomorrow, and in the American League East, it's getting to that part of the division. Nobody wants to win the darn thing. And the Rays can just be treading water till everybody comes back, and usually they make the move after Memorial Day for before 4th of July. It's going to be fine. It's a lot of baseball to be played left. And
well,
the
last
Rays.
Couple of games have been a lot like it's been Rays baseball, you know, with
yes,
pitching leading
yes.
the way and some defense and, you know, not a lot of hitting but enough. So, you know what, if they can keep this pattern going for a while, maybe they can get back on their feet, get above 500 and start pushing for the top again.
Well, I'm not worried. I
beat the Yankees twice.
There you go.
I'm not worried about.
Well, let me tell you something. I've seen the Yankees the last two nights against the Mets, and they, boy, I'll tell you, if you look like a team in disaster, the Yankees are right there with them.
Oh no,
hey, guys, that's a team in trouble. That's a team in trouble. They're starting to lose their pitchers. Pineda's
right.
out.
Right.
Sabathia's out. Yeah, they got issues, guys. So you know, this is a time to make a move. If you're the Rays, this is a great time to you know
mm-hmm.
catch up and. Try to put some, you know, not only catch them, but move past them, put some distance between yourself. So, again, if they can continue to play, kind of, you know, raise ball, it should work out for them here on the rest of this road trip. That'd be nice.
I'm sure they're going to do that because I'm confident Joe Madden. But Roy, mixed emotion for me tomorrow night. Joe goes back to Anaheim. I went to high school with Mike Socha, a good friend of mine, and Joe's a friend of mine, too. Who do you vote for? I won't watch the games at all. This goes right down the middle. I can't cheer for one and not the other team.
I don't know. How long is the series? Is it four games? You hope for a
four
split.
Games.
If it's three, well, you know.
They
always
vote
for the home team, Tommy.
I know, but Mike's a good friend of mine up there and that, and he used to be my caddy outside of Philadelphia for the couple of tournaments I was in and that. And I still remember the day of Dunedin, Roy, and everybody. I was working for the Jays back then. I had to get some stuff back, you know, batting practice out there. I said, "Hey, Mike." I said, "Tommy, is that you? What are you doing back there? I'm just fetching balls." the fly balls out there. But, Roy, we'll let you go back to the hockey game. And always, always a pleasure, sir. And we got to go tee it up after this NFL gets everything over with and take some time off. Me, you, and Ira will be guests at Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club up there.
Certainly up for that, guys. Thanks for having me again, as always.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Before you leave, I'll update you on the Yankees. Young just tried to make a dive. He catches out of left field, missed the ball, went all the way to the fence, and the Yankees are up 1-0 at Citi Field.
Oh,
yeah, there you go. Which Young, Chris or Eric?
Eric.
Eric, okay, very good. All right. Well, thanks for the update. Hey, you know what? Again, they need some defense there with the Mets, so we'll see what happens.
And, you know, the two wins they had were at Yankee Stadium. You know, now they're at the City Field. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all right,
guys.
Thanks
for
having me. I really
appreciate it.
Take care, Roy. Have a great week.
All right,
yes,
guys.
Take care. Take care, Roy. Thank you so
much. Not only
were
they at Yankee Stadium, but they were at Yankee Stadium, and Tanaka's up right now, and he has to, I guess it's been a long time since he batted. But anyway, they're playing in the National League Park, so he's got to hit tonight.
That's right.
But I'll tell you, the Yankees, I mean, the first two games at Yankee Stadium were just a disaster. The bullpens completely fell apart. I mean, Joe's having a tough time finding it. This is really a key game for the Yankees because they're hoping now they can go with Tanaka for the first eight and then let Robinson come in and finish the game because this is the kind of game that the Yankees have to win.
Well, I'll tell you, Don, I'm not happy with the Phillies. I don't see any life whatsoever, and Cody Ashe making three errors last night that lost that game for Lee.
Mm. And of course, you know, it's so funny because they come out of spring training so good, and then here it is, they're just teetering around 500, especially in America. The National League East is tougher. It's a tough division in the National League, guys. You got those three great teams up there.
Right.
Well, that's a surprising thing. Maybe
I'm sorry,
Don. You agree or not, but the surprising thing is that, you know, Howard hadn't gotten off to that bad a start. I mean, they were really concerned about him at the beginning of the year because of the, you know, recurring injuries and so forth. But he hasn't played that badly. I think he's hitting like 253, 256, something like that. And, you know, Rollins at shortstop, he's been okay. You know, he hadn't gotten the ball in play quite as much as they'd like him to have gotten in play. But I mean, at first, second, and short, they're not in too bad shape. It's the rest of the rest of the gang. I mean, you don't know what they're going to do.
Well, you know, they sent Hernandez down to Reading to get experience at third, and he hit like 350, 360. They brought him back up, and they sent Nix down. Well, if they sent him down there to get third base experience, then I think it's time, that with Ashy having his problems, give this kid a chance at third base, you know, because he is, at least at this stage in his career, he's a better hitter. He proved that last year than Ashy. And the I'm with you with Howard. The only thing is he's not getting the home runs and the RBIs. And Dominic Brown has one home run for the whole season.
Yeah, terrible.
Oh,
yeah, he's awful.
Let me tell you, he is no Gold Glove outfielder either.
Oh, he's not.
Wow.
He's not. And Ruff is back on rehab at, I think, at Lehigh Valley. So they have him playing left field. I've got to believe when he's ready that he's going to come up and they're going to put him in left field, because the 2 years that he's been up for even part of the seasons, he's gotten good home run power, you know, and hit a lot of home runs. And they've got to get more power. But they just seem to be so lethargic that there's no oomph. You know, when I watch them play.
Wow, that's
Sunday, if they put Dominic in left field, he has all kinds of trouble. If they put him in right field, he has all kinds of trouble.
Right.
I mean, the guy
exactly.
And I don't know where he throws the ball. I mean, if a ball goes out there, you know, he's liable to throw the thing to the left fielder. You know, I mean, you don't know what he's doing with the ball.
You're exactly right, Don. And look at Sunday. They had that game won, and Bastardo comes in and gives up the runs, and they lose. And then last night with those errors, I felt sorry for Cliff Lee. I mean, he pitched a beautiful game, and Ashy's errors are what lost the game. It wasn't Cliff Lee. I mean, he lost it on the record, but, you know, it wasn't him. But you've got your buddy Mike Sosa's got to be happy going back to the West Coast, Tommy.
Yeah, so they're playing, which is so funny because he's playing against Joe, and I probably told you guys the story, I tell the audience this. Well, one day I'm walking in the field, Tropicana Field, right? So Joe Maddon says, "Who's your favorite manager?" So Mike is in the cage. I pointed at both of them.
Hey, Tommy, this program, all our programs are dedicated to men and women of the United States Armed Forces. And there's a poker run this weekend. And our next guest is putting this thing together for the vets. Misty, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Hey, Misty.
Good.
How are you doing today?
Hi.
By the way, Misty, I did birdie that hole when I talked to you on the golf course the other day. I hit the best.
Yeah, you know, Tommy, she sat up all night waiting to hear that.
I did, really.
Sort of Roger.
Hey, Frank, as you said, Tommy's retired but doesn't realize it yet.
No, he doesn't know that yet.
All the other slobs like us are out there working. Tommy thinks he's working, but he's on the golf course.
I wouldn't have called on you. You just called on yourself. I didn't do it.
I will tell you this. The New York Post, I'm back in New Jersey, and, of course, I get the New York Post every day. But they just sent through with their paper today an application for everybody to donate whatever they want, $10, $20, $30, $50, $100, $1,000, whatever you want, every one of their papers, and it goes to the Wounded Vets, spirited by the USO. And I know that everybody's going to be participating in that because we've talked about the Wounded Vets many, many times on this program. And
absolutely.
It just happens that the New York Post, with all their circulation, sent through an individual letter to each one of the people that subscribe to the Post. And if you donate only $10, they're going to send you an American flag. Can you imagine?
Oh.
It must cost them $5 to get the flags. But anyway, they're going to send you a flag, but you can donate anything you want to. It's up to you. And I just wanted to throw that in tonight while we were talking about the vets.
Thank you for saying that, Don. Thank you.
Misty, give us an idea of what's going to go on this weekend, and then I know you have another one coming up for St. Jude's in a couple of weeks. We could talk about that later on, but tell us what you have going this weekend.
Well, we're going to start from 10 to 4, and we've hooked up with the American Legion, so a lot of their riders from all their posts will be out. we're going to have our roller derby girls at each stop dealing the hands. And the games, going to have different games for the riders to earn an extra card. We got different vendors going on that will be here throughout the day. We got dragsters and stock cars that are going to be here with their drivers. We'll have a 50-50 raffle, $25 gift card to our restaurant, Buckaroo Roadhouse. We're going to have lightning tickets, thanks to you guys for the donations that we'll have. We have a $50 to a $200 gift certificate from Mike Parsons Tattoo Shop. There's so much others that I've got on the list. It's just like we really were very, very lucky in the donations that we've been given to us to do for this. There's going to be
terrific
food and stuff afterwards. So we're really excited. It's our first one, so, you know, we're really excited to be able to do this.
Now, are they going to have a cookout afterwards, or
where's
the ride going to take place?
We have our food and stuff available. We're going to do a few little extra things that we don't normally have added, like the hot dogs and everything. Of course, always have the, you know, ice-cold beer and sodas and chips, and, you know, kids are welcome. We're family-oriented here.
Aww.
Great.
So we're
great.
Really
and
looking
again,
forward to it.
Why don't you give us the address where they're going to start and where they're going to finish?
Okay, it's going to be the same. It's the Buckaroo Roadhouse in Bradenton. It's 16300 East State Road 64. It will start here. You got to be here and signed in and get your first card by 10 and be back to get your last card by 4 p.m. at the same stop. Other stops are Tink's Lounge, Bubba's 2, and American Legion Post 312.
Terrific.
Wow. Great. And how many people do you think you'll have?
As of the other day, we had almost 30 riders.
Wow.
Great.
Now, once
great
the riders leave, I have a Porsche poker run coming through. We are a stop for a Porsche poker run coming through Tampa. So, and we're going to have a donation bucket out there that we're allowed to put out for the vets as well. So that should collect us quite a bit also.
Great.
Oh,
that's great. And you have, so you have the poker run, and then you have fellowship at your place. Is there anything else? And they have 50-50 drawing?
50-50 drawings. We're going to do some raffling and some auctions afterwards with different gift cards and T-shirts and other items that have been donated. We've got a sawmill, Tim, that's going to be here with benches and stuff that he's made that he donated once before for other benefits. We have Bubba, which is the family that lost their kids in a severe car accident on Christmas. They will be here doing some auctions and having a table set up.
Aw.
Great.
Well, on behalf of the Tampa Bay Storm, we're glad we can help in any way possible to keep on helping you guys out down there.
We appreciate it so much. Thank you very much.
Like I said to you on the golf course, you're a friend of mine, you're a friend of the radio program now. So we get you on and talk about all the different events up there and that. And by the way, I did birdie that hole, hit a nice chip shot off of sand and put it 10 feet from the hole.
Awesome. We'll have to call you
on a
again.
Golf course.
Well, Misty, on behalf of all the working stiffs out here, we'd like to donate Tommy to be given away.
You got
well,
it, Frank.
Frank. Take your phone with you on the golf course. Let's do it. Come on.
You know, I want to remind you of one thing, that they do have each Sunday a section in the paper, you know, jobs.
Yeah. So think about that, Tommy.
Yes.
Donna would help if
you
learned how to read.
Of course, call me.
I can't read. Don, I can't read. You read the funny.
Obviously can't count. You obviously can't count either if you had a birdie.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I mean, how's that phone working I sent you? You can get a lot of information on that.
I wonder how many different Bens you used to sign that card, because nobody else was playing with him. You know that.
I count strokes on a golf course. Good. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's it.
Roger sent us a potpourri of information. I want you to know that. I don't know whether you fellas had a chance to see any, but I received an envelope in the mail today.
Oh,
I didn't even know
he
was a Catholic.
He had the whole world covered.
Wow.
Got to take care of my friends.
Oh, I know, Roger. Thank you so much for all you've done for us. Oh, my God. I mean, it's just
yep.
the...
Well, I'm still waiting to find out how that BlackBerry's working.
Well, I'm going to get it. I'm going to look at it. Get
so
it done
Tommy. You hear that, Frank?
He's going to put that right next to the phone numbers that he has to get a hold of everybody.
That's right.
He tried the on button.
And a serious note, guys, Barbie's car was in the shop all week, so I had to chauffeur her around all week. And
well, let me
you
tell
you
the first
say, another
first
shot
step,
at Tommy for your address so that we can everybody in the Tampa Bay area will know it so that they can get started on it. We'd appreciate that.
Yes.
The first day, Tommy, let me tell you this. The first day,
that's
maybe the
point.
Easiest part of the whole thing is you have to plug it in.
That's right. Yeah.
I know.
Still there?
Yes.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, that's a great cause. You know, I'm a member of the USO and Wounded Warriors Project, and as a you know, a veteran and retiree of the Navy, listen, God bless. I know what all you do. We talk about it, and people don't realize what the volunteers at the airports for the USO have to go through on a screening procedure,
right.
You know, to be able to work there. So good luck with that endeavor.
Thank you, guys, very much for everything and for having me on the show.
Well,
okay.
Best time
luck. Have a great weekend.
Yes.
You too.
Absolutely.
Look forward to it.
Good luck.
Good luck. Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Take care.
Guys, we're joined by our resident pro. Who could, Doug, can you tell us what the rule is? Tommy was playing golf by himself, got a birdie, had three different pens, signed a card. Is that legal?
Well, if it had been a hole-in-one, I'd say no, but if it was a birdie, that's his honor.
I have a legitimate question to ask.
Uh-oh.
That is, in last week's event,
yeah.
down at Sawgrass,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they penalized Rose two penalty shots, a ball that they had to look at in slow motion hyper slow motion or something, and said the ball did move, and I don't understand how you can make this kind of a determination. I mean, first of all, the player is going to be honest enough to tell you if the ball moved to begin with,
right?
And it's happened now twice where they brought in the slow motion, ultra slow motion, and said, yeah, well, it did wiggle or something. I don't know what it did, but I mean, that's a tough penalty. He was in the top five in the tournament, and he took two strokes away from him.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's a situation where, you know, like you said, I mean, you know, back to the original point of him making a birdie by himself, but golf is a game of honor. Golf is a game of self-policing, and most of those guys are honest enough and forthright enough that they're going to come, you know, and tell you that something happened that they're not sure or,
right.
you know, what's the ruling. So in his situation, I mean, it's only a penalty if the ball changes its position. So it technically can oscillate, but it just can't, you know, move to a new position. And so we've talked about this before on the show with, you know, even in baseball and in instant replay and football and all these different sports that are now trying to, you know, use technology. It's not always the best thing
right.
in the world, you know, for the game. And unfortunately, it does have
about
an impact.
We talked about it with Tiger earlier this year.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, hell, I watched the Orioles game last night, and you know, with this whole manager challenge and whatever, I mean, the Orioles eventually wound up losing that game because they went
right.
to the instant replay. I swear to God that guy was out at second base, but apparently they thought he was safe. Eventually, Miguel Cabrera hit the three-run homer.
I watched it, too, over and over, and he looked after me, and Buck was really upset.
Yes.
Oh, and
rightly
oh
so.
He walks Torrey Hunter, and then, boom, Cabrera hits a three-run homer, and they lose the game. They get swept today. I mean, that sort of thing at the end of the day when
right.
you're looking back at a 16-game
right.
season in football and 162 games, it's
mm-hmm.
about the inches, and those things add up. And, unfortunately, that cost him a game, you know. And in Justin Rose's case, that cost him a pretty penny. So that's unfortunate. So, guys, I need to apologize to you. I haven't called for the last couple of weeks, unfortunately.
Oh, you're busy.
my grandmother had a stroke and eventually passed, and so the few weeks have been kind of rough.
Very sad news.
And, you know, it was, you know, some time well spent, I suppose, you know, with family. And I was actually, I'm the youngest of six grandchildren. I had the ability to speak at her funeral, which was an honor for me. So,
Well, very sorry to hear that, Doug.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
Keep your sympathies in your presence, Oscar.
On a lighter note, how long does it take from your house to Camden Yards?
Probably like 35 minutes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because I asked your father-in-law today to go down to take you to Dempsey's. I ate there last Thursday on my way back south. Met an old friend of mine from the Navy and his wife. And that's a really nice place right there in the warehouse at Camden Yards.
Yeah.
So your father-in-law advises me it takes like an hour and a half.
Oh, my
and
God.
I said, I find that hard to believe. So I'm glad I got it from the source.
Yes.
It is like 35 minutes.
But, you know, Roger, I can't diminish the value of his navigation skills, but, you know, I would
and
just tell you.
So he's gathering all this up.
Well, here's the question you have to ask him. How long does it take him to drive from his house to my house? You know, because here's the question. My wife did it in 10 hours, so I don't know what answer you're going to get from him, but I'm just telling you, parallel those two. And you'll have
And it is about 10 hours because it took me 10 to get to Woodbridge, Virginia. And I went up 35. So, you know.
Well, you want to buy him for Christmas. You want to buy him a nice GPS so he will, you know, he won't get lost.
He has one. Her name is Diane.
Oh, no.
RG, Tommy, and Don RG. He's a great guy, but we love him.
Come on, who's better than RG? He's a sweetheart, man.
He's great guy.
Around with him all the time, but he's the best.
I know one thing. He really enjoyed his time doing those lightning games. He says, "That's Phil Esposito. That's this guy. That guy. Tommy, you're right. One heck of a tour guide." He was telling me.
You know,
he was overwhelmed, wasn't he, Tommy?
What's that?
He was overwhelmed.
Oh, he was overwhelmed. He says, I know that guy. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, and I remember him. I said, RG, get Phil to sign something for you. You know, Phil will take care of you, sign something for you. And I had to come at the chief didn't come out of the booth up there, but still, I mean, you see, met Scotty Bowman, he saw Phil up there and that, and he said,
Don was kind enough to give us a tour of Longboat Key after we ate dinner. It was a great evening down there in Sarasota.
Oh, sure. I mean, RG had probably the best time in a long while. I mean, it's, you know, I know he hated to leave after that hockey game. He says, "Do I gotta leave now?" I said, "Oh boy, you know, like this put me in your trunk."
The only thing I remember him saying is, "Do we have to take Tommy with us?"
He probably didn't want to take him. That was the night. That was the night the car messed up, and thank God for Roger and then our owner and Matt Gary from All Sports Arena followed me down there and followed me back, and then they're trying to get in the complex there. Roger, the security guard.
That was a classic.
I said, "Sir, I want to get in here today, not tomorrow up here."
You guys may have touched on the subject earlier in the show, but I wanted to ask, particularly Don, what his opinion of the NFL draft and the Michael Sam situation was.
Well, we didn't get a really chance to talk to Roy about that tonight, but I'll be honest with you. Phil Mushnick wrote an entire piece in the New York Post last Sunday about that, and I have to agree. I think they're making a big deal out of nothing. I mean, here's a guy that played. He's an All-American player at Missouri. He played 4 years of college football. He played high school. And every time I turn around last night again, he was on again. I mean, I think they're making a big deal out of nothing myself. That's my opinion.
Okay.
Exactly.
That's kind of what I thought. I just thought it was unfortunate that from a personal standpoint that he had the courage to come out and announce that he was gay, and that's commendable, and I think anybody would view that the same way. The unfortunate part is that the big deal they're making out of it is that originally they said that they didn't want it to be about his sexual orientation that they wanted it to be
right.
about his football prowess. Now, on the flip end of that, after the guy gets drafted, they flip it around and say, okay, he's the first openly gay guy to get drafted in the NBA. Okay, well, what happened to the fact that he was the SEC Player of the Year and the team
mm-hmm.
drafted him
right.
because of his football skill? Why are we making
right.
this into something that it doesn't need to be? We all
because
know that he's gay. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's not the issue. Is he a good football player or not? And that's all I think he wants to be judged on.
I know,
well,
but
I
the
think
problem
that,
is
that he
is
heard
publicity.
Himself.
Now, that, the news media wants to completely... Look what's happening with the owners of the NBA there.
Yep.
I mean,
Sterling.
How many days and how many interviews can they do with that guy and with his wife before
right.
they finally exhaust anybody's patience?
Right.
Who cares?
Right.
I mean, who cares? And the same thing with this young fella. Let him get in, let him play, and then you want to talk about him and whether he's gay, I don't care. Whether
right.
you want to talk about can he play or can't he play, that's fine. But every
right.
night to have something on about it's strictly, to me, the news media trying to make stories.
Right.
Well, you know what, Don, and from what a lot of people are saying is that he's caused this himself by he and his partner with the cake in the face and a lip lock kiss on each other. You never see that when you have heterosexual people, okay, you know, with a draftee, but they're going to put on a show because they are in your face about it. I mean, that's the way a lot of people are looking at it.
Right.
Great point, Roger. You know, I'll put my two cents of it. I don't care if the man is, you know, black, white, purple, heterosexual,
right.
or gay. If he can play the game that he's on, getting paid the money to play the field, let the man play the sport, for God's sake. There's too many
right.
of this social, digital media, the TMZ, and it's so much crap going on. And, you know, Donald Sterling, you know, he's an idiot for saying it, and now he's regretting for saying that. Now, he would have said that back in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, early 90s. People, you know, none of this stuff. I think it's just the social media. These athletes today just got to watch themselves in order, because there's always a TMZ wants to get the extra money to get that head story up there. And that, you know, Michael Sims, let the man play. I don't care if he's gay, heterosexual. If he can play the game of football for the uniform that he has on his crest, let the man play the game that he loves to play.
Amen. Well, they said they need to make news, though. Doug, you're exactly right. I mean, you have to have stories every day for all these shows, whether it's Entertainment Tonight or whatever one, you know, they have a hundred of them now. But you know, they have to make stories every night, and then they can't make it for one night. They got to make it for five nights.
Well, the media uses the word distraction when they talk about how this may affect his locker room and his team. But at the end of the day, it's only a distraction because they make it that way. Because you have to understand, how many people do you think are in professional sports that haven't come out of the closet that are gay? That it hasn't been
a lot
so far. I mean, I promise
probably
you, through the years I played sports, I guarantee you somebody I ran across in my lifetime was homosexual. And it was never a problem. And it's only a problem because now we know, and the media makes it a distraction.
I'd say in professional sports, Mr. Robert,
women's basketball. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, you see so many of the coaches,
right.
the players. I mean, it's you know, who cares?
Brittany Griner.
Hey, Don.
Thank you.
We're joined by Russell Peltz tonight. Russell's got a big show coming up on Friday night down at the, it used to be the New Alhambra, now it's called the 2300 South, is that the Sugar House, Russell?
No, the Sugar House is a sponsor. This is a 2300 Arena in about a block off the river off Columbus Boulevard.
Ooh,
excellent.
Nice. Well, Russell, welcome to the program. So you're talking to Doug Argalpro, of course, Don Henderson, you know, and Roger Hendler, you know. And then thanks for coming on. And tell us more about your card coming up for this weekend.
Well, there hasn't been a card in this venue since January of 2012 when the NBC Fight Night series started, and that was the breakout fight for Brian Jennings, the heavyweight from Philly, who's now, you know, in the top 10 in the world. And after that, a couple months later, the was then called the Asylum Arena shut down. But the owners bought out the building next door, which was a Foreman Mills building, mm-hmm. and they expanded it. We've only got seating for 1,100 now, but by the fall, it's going to seat 1,700 with a balcony. and they're going to put in a sports bar with boxing, wrestling, and cage fighting memorabilia. So we're looking forward to it.
That's great.
Russell, I didn't have a chance to be on with you much the last time we were riding the family down, and I know you did a great job on the show, but I thought you made a key point while I was listening, and that was that Philadelphia has always been noted for Philadelphia fighters and fighting each other. And how many really legitimate Philadelphia fighters do you have that you can put together to make a card?
Fewer than ever in the 45 years I've been in the business. You know, somebody was telling me the other day, another matchmaker, that in 1986 there were 8,500 licensed boxers in the United States. And this year there are 2,900 licensed boxers in the United States.
25%.
It's a little scary. I mean, of course, the heavyweights are all playing football. So, you know, that's the problem. And, you know, the other sports advanced and boxing stood still, you know, money-wise. I mean, listen, you're always going to have the Floyd Mayweathers at the top. But sometimes when you go into the cupboard, it's there. And the only thing that's going to save boxing, well, one of the things that will save boxing will be good fights. There's just not enough of them. There's good fighters. The question is getting them to fight each other with Showtime fighting HBO and Golden Boy fighting Top Rank, and everybody wants to have 30 wins and no losses. And I joke that, you know, the people who buy fights for HBO and Showtime and ESPN, they're only interested if you're undefeated or if you've got one loss. So I joke with people that Archie Moore or Joey Girardello or George Benton couldn't get on television today because they lost too many fights.
That's true.
Everybody is so conscious of the one lost record that they forget that a lot of these fighters are playing Muhlenberg and Lehigh and Franklin and Marshall, and they're not playing Ohio State and, you know, Miami.
Right.
Did Merriweather win that last fight?
Yeah, and he was actually in a competitive fight this time, yeah. He had to fight
But
this
he did
time.
Win. You think he did win?
I honestly, I haven't seen the fight yet. I refuse to buy a pay-per-view because it's such a rip-off. But, yeah, I would say the majority of the people felt that Mayweather won. But he was, you know what, when you're winning every fight 12-0, and then you get into a fight where it's maybe 7-5 or 8-4, a lot of people think, well, he didn't really win the fight because he didn't win at 12-0. But, you know, the Phillies can beat the Mets 2-1. They don't have to beat them 8-2.
Right.
Well, you know, Russell, the one thing that even Ring Magazine and Fight Talk have always said that Maidana may have written a new history in the way to beat Floyd Mayweather, because he did have him down on the ropes a couple times. He didn't have him knocked down, but that was a fight, an excellent fight that went all the way, and of course it came down in Mayweather's favor, because it always does in Las Vegas. But do you think, given this match, do you think if they were matched up, would Pacquiao be able to take Mayweather down, given the fact that people were starting to say they're both starting to slip?
I've never been a big Pacquiao believer. I think a lot of the negative thoughts about Mayweather is that people can't get past his personality. You have to separate his personality from his ability. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to do that, you can appreciate how really good he is. And rather than thinking negative about his performance the other night, you should concentrate on the fact that he was finally in a fight in which he was pressed and had to find another way to win, and he was able to do that, rather than thinking, hey, maybe he's slipping. But listen, he's 36. I mean, fighters are allowed to be in competitive fights. I mean, he's been so perfect for so long that when there's a slight chink in the armor, oh, okay, now he's had it. Well, maybe he has, but, you know, he's a pretty incredible fighter. And probably would have been a competitive fighter in any generation. If you can take a fighter out of one generation and put him in another, which I don't believe is fair, but skill-wise, he's up there.
Sure. Is there any decent fighters coming out of Philadelphia. I mean, we've got Stevie Cunningham. I know you have Amir Mansour. We have Danny Garcia. Of course, there's the great Bernard Hopkins. Just the fact that the man is still fighting at his age is just amazement to me. But is there any up-and-coming fighters that you want to tell us about that you've got in your stable?
Well, there's a lot of good kids in the area. There's a really good junior lightweight right across the river in Camden, New Jersey, named Jason Sosa, who's lost one out of 16. He's knocked out his last seven since he's been under new management, and he looks like the real deal. I wouldn't be afraid to put him in with any 130-pound junior lightweight in the world. He's about 25, and he makes great fights. I think he's the best fighter that I personally have under contract right now from the area. But you got a couple of undefeated kids fighting Friday night. Naeem Nelson, who's a junior welterweight from the Upper Darby area, he's undefeated at 11 fights, and he's taking on an undefeated lefty from Bethlehem by the name of Jerome Rodriguez. So if we can continue to get the local kids to fight each other, and you know, get the crowds coming back. Listen, it's never going to be what it was in the Spectrum in the 70s.
Right.
Those days are
gone. No, you're right.
You know, that was the last golden age of boxing in Philly, and that's not coming back. There's too many. Boxing was always a sport that was followed by old-timers, and they died off, and boxing did nothing to attract the younger crowd like the UFC may have. And you've got I might have said this on the last show, you've got a generation of sports editors who are young and don't know the history of boxing in Philly. And in the days when newspapers were viable, an Eagles fan, I think I said this, would read the paper and turn the page and see a fight story, or so would a Sixers fan or a Phillies fan. But now, if you want to read about the Eagles, you go to the football websites. So you don't get that crossover fan anymore. And how many times do you listen to talk radio? I mean, WIP here in Philly. I mean, will you hear a boxing comment once a month?
If you're lucky.
That's right. That's why Frank has the Fighting Words Radio Network. That's why we have you on whenever you want to come on to promote your fights.
Russell, how about the cage thing? Has that really hurt too?
Well, let's put it this way. It hasn't helped. But I think boxing, you know, whatever problems boxing has, it's done it to itself. When we were kids, we knew Sonny Liston was the heavyweight champ.
Right.
We knew Archie Moore. You know, we knew Sugar Ray. Now, I can't even name, I mean, four champs. It's like, forget the NBA playoffs. Say there's no NBA playoffs. In other words, Miami says, we're the champ, and the Nets says, we're the champ, and Thunder says, we're the champ. That's what boxing is like. There's no unified champions. Everybody's walking around with a belt.
Well, so I wanted to ask you, you had that card at the Leocora Center. Do you look into the future that might be a very good venue that would be profitable for you because of the location and right there with the subway and everything?
Oh, no. That's a beautiful building. It's an expensive building. We didn't do well that night because for a lot of reasons. The people that I was involved with were against loading the show up with Philly fighters, which was so flabbergasting to me that I said, okay, listen, do what you want. Just get me out of it.
That's sad.
You can't come into a city like Philly and bring in all out-of-town fighters. I don't care how good the main event is. I mean, it wasn't like Bristow was fighting Cyclone Hart in the main event, and it didn't matter. Mansour and Cunningham are solid guys, but they don't have that kind of following in Philly that the guys in the 70s had. So try to load the card up with local kids. There's a lot of good talent right now in Philly, a lot of good local talent. The problem is the people who control them, the new generation, everybody wants to win 25 in a row. Even the fighters talk like that. The fighters talk like managers. Get me an easy fight. Can't you get me something easy? I say to myself, do you think I ever went into the gym in the 70s and Bristow or Jeff Chandler or Cyclone Hart said to me, get me an easy fight. I mean, it's just a whole new mentality. It's just because they all think it's like every high school player is not going to play in college, and every college player isn't going to make it to the NBA. But all the fighters think they're going to get on HBO one day if they're 25 wins and no losses, and it just doesn't work like that.
No.
No,
they think it's quantity and not quality.
Right.
Right. And if they do make it to HBO and they're successful, it's because the guy that they're fighting came up the same way, you know, with 25 easy fights.
Right.
So I said this before, you don't always see the best fighters. You see the best fighters with the best records.
Mm.
There's a lot of good fighters out there who can beat those guys, but they don't get the chance.
Is women's fighting growing at all?
I hope not. I've been against women. I mean, if my father ever caught me promoting a woman's fight, he'd say, is this what I raised you to do? I mean, how can you send your wife or your girlfriend or your daughter or your – how could you do that? I mean, listen, I love women's basketball, women's tennis. I don't want to see a woman getting punched in the mouth.
I don't either.
And they're good fights. Some of them are good fights. I mean – but I can't imagine if my sister was out there fighting and I'm watching her getting hit and get cut. I don't know. It's just, sorry, that's just me.
I'm with you, too. Well, yeah, I'm with you, because half the time these girls get in the ring, they're so beautiful. Now, what's she doing in the ring? She should be a model. She'd be, you know, I love playing girls.
We're all a
I love
bunch of chauvinists.
No, I wish she should be a model, and then
Tommy, she may be a model to you, but
that's
right. You can't take
but you never
else.
Can tell. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, compared to the girl in the other corner.
Well, there we go, the other corner and that. But I go Greer and Russell. I like watching girls basketball, girls softball, and that. It's fun. It's fun to watch up there. But I can't see having a girl in the ring. It's not right.
Yeah, and some of them, like Ann Wolfe, who trained Shane Kirkland, she could probably beat half of the men out there.
Oh,
she was one tough. Good. I mean, the star women like Christy Martin and Layla Ali, and I forget the other one who was a Playboy model, they would beat Ann Wolfe when Ann Wolfe was fighting.
Mm.
They wouldn't get near her.
Yeah, Layla Ali just went into the Pennsylvania Sports Hall of Fame, didn't she?
No, Jackie Fraser lied.
Ooh,
that's right.
Okay.
That's who it was.
Yeah.
It was the other Joe's daughter.
Right.
That's right. She's the attorney, correct?
She's a judge now. She's a sitting judge.
She's a judge now. Wow.
Wow.
The official ceremony is this Sunday in Philly.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Did she go to Rutgers? I recall that we had Joe on when I was doing a show in Princeton years ago. Joe was on his way back from seeing his daughter at Rutgers, and I would. So it was probably her at the time, because this goes back to, mid-late 80s.
I'm really not sure. Really not sure.
Oh, Russ, I got you a question right now. The Tampa Bay's going to have, Frank, you've probably seen this, they're going to have a big boxing match in June up there. What's your view of the Tampa Bay area becoming like a Philadelphia, the boxing mecca of down here? Because you got the Safety Harbor Spa with a lot of people, a lot of boxers train out here. I just want to have your opinion, what you think of the Tampa Bay boxing, maybe could have, you know, the boxing in the Tampa Bay market here.
I don't know much about Tampa Bay. Florida has never really been a big boon place for boxing. Maybe for a year or two when Roy Jones Jr. was in his prime and fighting in Pensacola. And, of course, back in the 80s, Alexis Arguello fought Aaron Pryor down there. But on a steady basis, there hasn't really been consistent crowds coming out to support boxing. Probably since Chris Dundee was promoting at the Miami Beach Convention Hall in the 50s and 60s.
Well, you know, we do have Keith Thurman does work out here, and we have Winky Wright, guys like that. But, Keith is into his own now. You got Jeff Lacy trying to come back, which I think is a big mistake. As far as ever being even a quarter of a scale of what you have or had in South Philly, Tommy, I don't think you're ever going to see it, not in this area.
Because it's a shame because the safety of our spot, Frank and everybody, some of the boxes trained down there, and you got the Frank, what's that rink up in Tampa?
The
with a lot
Fourth
of boxes?
Street, 4th Street Gym.
Right, a lot of boxes.
Frank, they tried a couple of years ago when they had maybe two or three fighters that had some type of national exposure, and they tried to make Tampa become more aggressive boxing-wise, but as Russell said, it really hasn't caught on. It really hasn't, hadn't taken over the city where they could get 8,000 or 10,000 people to go to a boxing match.
Well, yeah, of course, there's a lot of cities like that today. But it's too nice down in Florida. That's the problem. It's too nice.
Right.
you need more ghettos.
That's right. That's we got them.
Can you just give us an overview?
Yeah, they all have guns.
Your show for Friday night and the cost and where our fans can get tickets.
Well, they can get tickets. They'll be able to get them at the door. They can call our office, which is 215-765-0922, or they go to our website, PhelpsBoxing.com. There's 8 fights, starts at 7:30, and the tickets are $50 and $75, and there's a lot of good Philly prospects in competitive fights on the show. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, that's a great buy. You know, for 8 bouts. What a nice evening, and it's right there on Columbus Avenue. You said it. It's a new facility, and they're even making it better.
Well, it's an old facility redone. It's a block off Columbus Boulevard. Yeah, it's actually 900 Swanson Street at the corner of Swanson and Rittner.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Best of luck, Russell. I hope it goes over big time, and I hope it shoots when they expand to 1700 and have the museum and all the rest of it together. I hope it's even more successful. Thanks very much for joining
us. Okay, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Russell. Good luck.
Okay.
Thank you, Russell. Wow, it doesn't get better than that, guys. Russell Peltz, the great boxer promoter in the Philadelphia area. And, I had to ask a question about, because Tampa's got a great venue, the A La Carte Pavilion, the Doubletree, also the Tampa Bay Times Forum, and they got a great training facility, Safety Harbor Spa. Why don't we have more championship fights in some cards down here? That's a question, and I got answered pretty good by Russell Peltz and everything. Back in the 50s, tried in Miami, and now they couldn't do it here. So hopefully someday they might do something here, wake up and get this boxing in Tampa Bay going.
Is Doug still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, there he is.
I wanted to ask you, have you ever been to any boxing events in Baltimore?
I have not. The only thing I can remember kind of as a kid in the Baltimore arena, I had done the Skipjack games for hockey when they had a minor league hockey team, and then I had done some of the I remember going there and watching, I want to say it was like Hulk Hogan and the WWF when it was there a couple times. That's about it.
I can't really remember any boxing in Baltimore, to be honest with you, Doug. I mean, I've been to the Felt Forum, Madison Square Garden, the Spectrum, Blue Horizon. But I never really remember ever going down Baltimore to the Baltimore way except to watch when the Bullets were there. But no boxing. I don't remember any boxing there.
Yeah, I can't imagine that Baltimore was a huge mecca for boxing. In fact, I think one of my members at Hayfields, Roger, you were talking about Dempsey's. Rick Dempsey is actually a member, and I get a chance to see him, maybe once a week or so. But one of my members
does a great job on TV with Tom Davis.
He's great. I love to talk to him in person because he just kind of tells you like it is, and you know what I mean? And that's, to me, that's refreshing, I guess, because like we said, in the world we live in, all of a sudden, some of the rules have changed in terms of what we're tolerant of or what we're supposed to be tolerant of and all those sorts of things. So it's refreshing to kind of to hear him, say it like it is, you know what I mean?
Say it like it was.
Yeah, and there
that was his that was his nature at all times.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Well, never forget the 83 World Series, right? Phillies won the first game and then got swept.
Yep.
Oops.
Oh boy, Joe DiMaggio's walking down here, Mr.
A lot of pitchers I talked to said that he was one of the best catchers they'd like to work with because he loved to get that ball down in the dirt. He never he was never afraid to call that slider a two-strike pitch, and he was an outstanding player.
Yeah, he was.
Hey, Doug, I should have a question right now. This is the last tournament on Florida Greens was the tournament last week in Jacksonville. Now, what's the difference to these players? Are these players ready for a difference of Northern Greens and Northern Terrain for playing these championship tournaments on Northern Golf right now, golf courses?
Yeah, I mean, you'll talk about the schedule as it's laid out by the PGA, where they probably start in Hawaii and kind of move their way into California, then they take their trips kind of into the Florida area, Georgia for the Masters and those sorts of things, and they kind of work their way up and down the coasts to kind of keep it convenient. But there's a huge difference in what they're playing on and a lot of the grasses and all those sorts of things. I mean, obviously in the south you're in the more of a Bermuda kind of an area, and then in the north, the Maryland area that we're in is a particularly difficult area for superintendents to grow grass in because of all the different microclimates and all the different issues that you're going to have, from frost to drought to snow to all the different things that are in between that. So you kind of have to find grasses all over that are more tolerant of all the different conditions. And as you guys know, in the south, when we would make visits down to Debbie's parents' house, a lot of the Bermuda grass is all dormant, and so they'll overseed with rye or something like that to keep it green. Where up here, you're talking about your fescues, your ryes, your bluegrasses, your bent grasses, and all those sorts of things that require each and every one of them requires a little bit different care to it. So it does make a huge difference. And people always talk about the Bermuda grass greens and how the grain can affect a lot of the putts and how they read the putts and where the sun is setting and different growth that you get. And it is more difficult for sure.
That's a question.
One thing they talked about on the telecast last week a great deal, and that was, well, especially after the rain and the final round when they had to postpone for a period of time. But they talked about they thought it was great that they didn't put on fast greens all night. Of course, they talked about the Masters being up there 17, 18. But they were talking about, it's great to play a tournament on slow greens. They shouldn't all be, 14, 15, whatever.
Well, and a lot of that, too, when you talk about, that's one of the most often used and misunderstood terms in golf when they talk about the speed of greens, because it's relative to, typically there's this they use where you hold it up at a certain height and you drop a ball on it and it rolls down it, and then how many feet it rolls is typically what the greens, quote-unquote, stimp at. But you have to understand that speed of greens is also relative to the undulations that are in a lot of those greens. And some of these golf courses that you play, particularly in this north area, are very undulated, as you guys know, in kind of the Philly area as well. So you'll have, like, the Donald Ross-type greens, and a lot of those greens, depending on who your architect was, may have severe slopes and undulations and tiers and all those sorts of things where, you play a public golf course that's flat, and your greens are at 10 on the stimp meter, then you go to a different golf course that has severe undulations and you have 10, and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, those numbers aren't the same, because these greens are a lot faster. So clearly pin placements make a big deal in those situations, and the usage of your greens in terms of the quadrants that you can put those pin placements because of those tiers, so it makes a huge difference in their games for sure.
Right. Yeah, that's a good question, because these guys are used to the southern courses up, and now they're going to go back up to the northern where the greens are up there. They're faster, like you said, faster greens. Now, how much does psychic does that play for the golf, for the pro set up there? Because this is the last time we'll be playing in the south. And what's the next stop up? Greensboro, Memorial up there? I know they start going to start making their way up north up there. What, Doug, what's the psychic of the pro golfer's head right now for, well, I'm leaving the south now. I got to go back to leave the southern golf tips behind me. Now I got to go back to the north up there. Now, what's the psyche for the golfer?
Well, it's certainly, I mean, as skilled as those guys are, it's an adjustment of different facets. So some of those guys might actually change putters in terms of the effective loft that's on that putter. Typically, a standard effective loft on a putter is about 4 degrees. So they may do some different things with placing the ball in their stance or their putter head, like I said, to either add or subtract loft to have the ball roll a little bit more or quicker. And so they'll play with a lot of those different things. But as skilled as they are, You know, green speed is something that they can quickly adjust to. More than anything, I would say that it's probably how they go about reading the greens. As you guys may or may not know, you know, you guys play in different tournaments where you have scrambles and you have four guys putting. And, you know, Brad Faxon, I actually saw it on TV at one particular point, took a certain putt, and he made, it was like he dropped four balls, and he made all four of them with different speeds and different breaks.
Hmm.
And so everybody putts differently. So the more pace you put on the golf ball, the less it's going to break typically, and vice versa. So, you know, a lot of those guys will make the adjustment of how they read their greens and how they want to make those putts in terms of their speed and their breaks and all those sorts of things. And you'll see one of the biggest things, you know, that we talk about on the show from a golf tip standpoint is, unfortunately, when people practice the game of golf, your average, you know, weekend or weekday golfers, they always go to the driving range. They always want to see how far they can hit the ball, and they always work on their full swing.
Yep.
But these guys are so good that it's in and around the greens. That's where you're going to spend some 50 to 70% mm-hmm. of your strokes, whether you hit greens or not. It's the putting, it's the chipping, it's mm-hmm. the bunker play, it's the pitching, and that, you know, 100 yards and in range that truly defines your score. And so, unfortunately, we need to kind of flip that around so that when people have, you know, allocated the practice time, they do it in relationship to their game and spend maybe 70% of their time practicing their short game, you know what I mean, to make it parallel.
But Doug, it's right. So funny because you go to the driving range, you see these guys. I'm going to say this nicely. You take these guys, they grip down on these clubs, and they try to beat the crap out of the ball. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they try to hit that cart going out there. They try to beat the crap out of this ball.
I mean,
but then again, they go to the course, and it's a whole different story up there because you got trees up there, you got water, and the sand traps up there. Now, the lesson you gave me out of the sand trap, and I've been using this higher wedge, a loft shot, like you told me a couple weeks in the program. Use that, and Doug, I'll be using that with the lesson you gave me. And honest to God, my short game is 100% better. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And I can flat out tell you, you know, we've talked from time to time about the construction of your set in terms of, you know, driver, fairway wood, hybrids, irons, putter, wedges, and all those different things that make up your 14 clubs that you're allowed to use. And so many people are still, in this day and age, and I see it, trying to hit 3 irons, 4 irons, you know, 13 and a half degree, you know, 3 woods, you know, and all these different things that, unfortunately, it just makes it so difficult for your game. You know, add some loft to your game. Get more comfortable with some of the hybrids and lose those long irons. Get more comfortable with your 5 woods and add some loft to those, and just understand that on some of those par fives, I'd rather hit a good, crisp, you know, shot that gets me into an area where I can get to the green as opposed to trying to hit, you know, the one perfect 3 wood that's going to maybe get me to the front or on the green one out of, you know, 5 times, if that. You know, so you just kind of have to understand that game is golf, like, you know, like baseball, is a game of failure. And you're going to hit bad shots, but we have to be able to manage those shots so that we can still, you know, have a good score in the game.
Okay, because I have a question for you. You know, here, like you said, the courses up in the north are going to get populated, especially the private and municipal ones up there and that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this guy's like 225 yards out in a par five. He wants to get home. He hasn't played in a while. Would you suggest to him hit a nice little, like a 6-iron, just to get, you know, distance up in front of the green? And half the time these people, Don, Roger, Frank, you've seen it, they're 225, 230, they wait till the guys get off the green, and the guy hits mm-hmm. a worse shot. You know, usually, okay. Would you suggest the guy would take out a 5-iron or 6-iron? Is it a good iron swing to get out there with 100 yards, less than 100 yards to get to the green?
Yeah, and again, and in most cases, I think that to be able to, because managing a golf course, managing yardage is kind of an intangible, kind of inane kind of situation where, you know, we expect to hit a good shot, but we're not sure if we're going to. The first thing I always look at when I get in those situations is, first of all, if you're talking about the yardage, I look at the green, I look at the pin, and I look at the things that are around the green. You know, are there hazards, are there bunkers, you know, long, rough, out of bounds, et cetera. And wherever that pin sits, I diagram that green into whether, just like you're sitting at a stoplight, is it green, is it yellow, or is it red? You know, so if it's a green light for me, that means the flag is in a comfortable spot where I feel like I can attack it. If it's in, you know, a yellow spot, proceed with caution. And if it's in a red spot, I'm not going to try to even look at that pin. You know, so if you have water, you have bunkers, you have out of bounds, you have a lot of those things, and you're uncertain maybe in that yardage, yeah, then absolutely try to hit something. If your favorite yardage is 125, because that gets you into your 9-iron or your wedge, you know, hit it 100 yards, you know, and get to that 125-yard mark. It's okay. So many people think, oh, my God, I have to get it up there. I have to get it closer. I have to get it on the green. But when you're actually managing those yardages, it doesn't matter whether you play Augusta or you play a municipal golf course or you play something in between. 150 yards is 150 yards everywhere in America.
Wow.
And so if you get comfortable, and that's why when I say people go to the range, understand what you hit your clubs and know what you feel comfortable in. So if you love that 150 range, if you love that 125-yard range, maybe it's your sand wedge that you love that's a 75 or 100-yard shot, play to those distances on the golf course so you know you can score. And don't take those unfortunate risks of, okay, well, 225, you know, maybe that's my 3-wood or my 5-wood or my 4-hybrid, whatever it is, but guess what? You know, there's out of bounds over there left. So why am I going to try to hit it on the green when I know if I mishit it, I'm just going to incur a penalty shot or two in that case? You know what I mean? And now I have a situation where my score has gotten worse, and I've just played a hole particularly well that I've made a mistake on that I've turned into a disaster. Keep it in play, get to your yardages, and feel comfortable in those yardages.
And it's tough that Don can realize, and Roger and Frank, I mean, especially Don, it's tough to get those strokes back because you're in A1 position off the fairway and in that par 5, and then you take out and you say to myself, well, I'm going to do something stupid right now.
Yeah.
Take the wood out.
There's no worse feeling than leaving an easy hole, whether it's a par 3, 4, or 5, and, you know, making a bogey or something worse, knowing that that was an easy hole when you just screwed it up. There's no worse feeling.
Oh, it's just this terrible feeling.
That.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Don,
following up what you were saying about the driving range, I'm not a golfer, but I've been to a number of tournaments. But the one I really remember is I was at a practice round in Augusta in 73. I was living in Columbia, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And a trainee I had with me who was a golfer, we followed this one guy, and I forget his name. He was a very well-known golfer at the time. But we stayed there, and from this one tee, he hit it over 200 times, over 200 balls, used a couple of clubs, and it was from the same spot. But what he was doing is he was angling it, and obviously he had a method to what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just one hole. So you figure if he even did, I mean, not that he's going to do 18, but say he did even 9. I mean, you know, you're talking about what could be 1,800 shots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the norm for a professional, you know, at a tournament.
It is, and you know, from a practice standpoint, you know, the professionals, that's their job. So they're waking up, and like, you know, we've talked about, I mean, they, you know, their diet, their workouts, their practice time, their on-the-course time. I mean, that's their job for 8, 10, 12 hours a day that they're trying to get their bodies right, they're trying to get their games right. You know, and for the average golfer who might only have, you know, I don't know, a half an hour a day, maybe an hour a day if he's lucky, you know, minus weekends where maybe he can play, you know, you have to make your time and use it effectively to work on those things that are going to contribute mostly to your score. And that's what we've talked about, which is going to be, where are you using most of your strokes? They're going to be in and around the green, so we should, you know, get comfortable with those shots.
You know, one of the things that amazes me as much as anything, not actually hitting the golf shot, but the patience and the mental concentration that they have when they have to stand around for 10 or 15 minutes while somebody's making a ruling or the reins or whatever the case may be. Man, when I'm playing, the worst thing in the world for me is to stand around. I just can't stand there for 15 minutes and then start hitting shots again.
There's no question. And I'll tell you, the solace for most guys in that situation, and whether they're under pressure, like you said, they're waiting to hit their shot or what have you, is all in their routine. And one of the things that you'll notice is if you ever watch a professional event and you get the opportunity, always go to the range. That's where most of the action is going to occur. And that's where the fun kind of is, to watch those guys and how they practice. And what you'll notice is that they're very methodical in their routines. They will never hit a golf ball unless they're ready to hit it. And so they're going to go through pretty much the same thing of the alignment, the grip, the stance, and all those pre-shot fundamentals that we talk about, they will do each one of them as it falls within their routine and their method. It could be a practice swing. It could be a series of practice swings, you know, a motion, a trigger or something. They will always do those things. And that's what that routine, when you get under pressure, if you focus on that routine, you focus less on the actual shot at hand and more about, you know, the routine itself and how you get there, and you can actually make some of those swings a little bit more freely and more confidently.
But even after you stood around for 15 or 20 minutes, you know, you play on a public course, you're gonna have the game back up on you, and sometimes you have to stay around 15, 20 minutes before you hit the next shot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it to me, it's almost impossible to keep concentration.
For sure. You know, and I've seen, you know, some different, you know, methods to cope with that, whether it's, you know, some guys will have the ability to, if they can carry their own bag or if they're in a situation where they have a caddy where they can walk and they can kind of space out their time a little bit more effectively.
Right.
I've seen people put headphones on, you know, to listen to music in between or, you know, just do some different things in terms of visualizing what it is they're going to do. You know, there's a lot of different ways to kind of cope with those stagnant situations because that's, at the end of the day, that's the unfortunate part about golf is that the golf ball has no force and neither does your body unless you create it. So you're starting from a static position with a golf ball and a ball that's not moving and has no force. You know, so, you know, that's kind of the same parallel.
Well,
are there any golfers that you see using any of these apps as they play the game today, like hole by hole? Where, you know, a lot of apps have different courses, you know, on the app. You know, you get an app for XYZ golf course. Do you see any of that happening?
Well, I mean, again, what we talked about with technology is a situation where the game of golf has evolved just like any other sport where you have, you know, guys have watches, their GPS devices, and all these distance measuring devices. Some even have slope and wind gradients in them that allow you to kind of say, okay, I'm X yardage, but because of the slope and the wind, it now changes it to this yardage, which is pretty cool. People track some of their statistics as they play with some of those same apps on their phone, which can also be used as a GPS device to tell you your distances. So they can say, okay, well, you know, today I had, you know, 32 putts and I missed 10 fairways or, you know what I mean? So they can kind of narrow down statistically what it is that they feel like they're doing well and what they're not doing well and then be able to kind of hone in on that to make some changes. You know, and one of the most important things is obviously, like we talked about, is knowing how far you hit their clubs, you know, so, you know, different things that can track, okay, I was 150 yards and I hit an 8-iron and it didn't make it, or, you know, different things that can kind of alert you that that some changes need to be made or some tweaks need to be made.
Well, you know, that was interesting because Jack Nicklaus was down at Sarasota last, he was at his golf course concessions, which he's not designing any courses, he said, in the United States right now, but this was one of the last ones that he did. It's a terrific, terrific course. And he was down last week, and, of course, the local papers had a great chance to interview him. And he said, you know, that he's still very much opposed to the not changing the ball, that they haven't reduced the length of the drives. And he said, you know, in my case, he said, everybody called me, you know, Big Jack or Jack the Bear and all. He said, I'm no bigger. He said, I was only 5'10". You know, I said, I wasn't a big guy. He said, at that time, everybody thought I was a big guy. He said, I'm no bigger. You know, I'm not as big as
right.
they think. You know, everybody thinks of me as a big guy.
Right.
But he said, the thing is that if he, when he was playing, that he could drive the ball 315 yards. And, you know, now that may be his, you know, a number one drive, but he said the capability of driving the ball 315 yards. Now, he said, he's opposed because they're driving it 335 or 340 yards, which he thinks takes a lot out of the game.
For sure. I mean, in Jack's defense, obviously, he could very well be the best golfer of all time. And unfortunately, his financial records won't dictate that he did win as much money, you know, and so I guess the point to be made is that over the years in any sport, you know, it's going to undergo a series of different changes, whether it's the rules, whether
right.
it's the technology, the equipment, the players themselves. We know how much looking at a guy like Tiger Woods' fitness has evolved in the game of golf. You know, Augusta. How many
he talked about the dots on the ball, too.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, again, you know, from all the changes in shafts and what compiles the golf club itself back in his day, from persimmon to what it is now, and all the different metals that are available, and the lightweight and the technology
right.
of coefficients of restitution and how fast the ball comes off the face and all these different, you know, things that have changed the game. I mean, we look at Augusta. How many times have they lengthened their golf course to tiger proof
mm-hmm.
it? You know,
several.
You know, and that's one of the initiatives of the PGA right now. Is what we've done is we've tried to make the game easier with technology and with the equipment. But what we don't understand is that there aren't that many players that can attack 7,500-yard golf courses. And so one of the initiatives of the game, of the PGA, is to, you know, grow the game and to make the game easier. I mean, who wants to hit five woods in the par fours? You know, I mean, that doesn't make it, you know what I mean? That doesn't make the game any fun. And unfortunately, people don't play the right sets of tees to maximize their fun that they have in the game. And that's an ego thing. It really is. Because, like I said, I mean, you put me on a golf course that's, and I've played them in tournaments that are 7,500 yards, and I'm hitting long irons and hybrids and different stuff like that into some of these greens, and I'll be damned. That's hard. You know, it doesn't make the game very much fun. So, you know, we just need to put our egos to the side and kind of play from where we should be.
But Doug,
I mean,
it's
I wouldn't
so funny
disagree with Jack. But.
But Doug, it's so funny. Get these Saturday afternoon hackers out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they play from the tip tees up there, where they spend all their fine time finding their balls in the woods.
Right. No question.
We think
it's so proud to find them, Tommy.
Well, I mean, and it's changed the pace of play because you look at
right.
a lot of these golf courses. They're trying to, you know, we run every 10 minutes, and some of these courses run them every 6 or 8 minutes because they're trying to get more people out there.
Right.
And unfortunately, you know, they play the wrong set of tees, they lose golf balls, they have to go back to the tee, or they take their drops, or they make
right.
their 6, 7, and 8, and it escalates the time it takes to play golf. And then at the end of the day, people are saying, well, listen, I don't have, you know, the travel time and the 5 hours and the drink or two afterwards, you know, the 7 hours it takes to play around the golf. So people are just not playing as much, you know, and that's
right. right. Well, the other thing is they look for balls. I mean, these guys hit balls all over the place, and then you spend 10 minutes watching them looking for a ball.
Pro V1s are $60 a dozen, you know, so if you do that math, I mean, that's an expensive golf ball.
Right. Well, that's one of the things Nichols talked about, too. He said in his day, 90%. Yeah, he said 90% of the players in his day played with Titleist. He said now there's so many different balls that, as you're saying, not only the size of them, but the cost of them.
Right.
I mean, they're pretty expensive.
Right. No
I mean, what, a box of Bridgestone is, what, $29 a box?
Oof, $29.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The Pro V1s and the Pro V1X are $60 a dozen. I mean, depending on where you get them, it can range anywhere from probably $48 to $60 a dozen. So you're talking $4 to $5.
That's $5 a ball.
It is.
Oh, my
God. You lose it, it's $5.
That's right.
Well, not only that, Roger, but the fact that, you know, they're not only getting $55 balls, but, you know, they're hitting them all over the place. They don't know they have no idea where those balls are going.
Right.
Some guy comes in.
No, you're right.
Unbelievable, big time. You got a big time bag and big time clubs and big time balls, and he's out there for a month.
And an expensive game.
Yeah.
Oh,
and no
boy.
Game. Yeah.
Yeah, or no game. Right.
I remember that skin of the honeymoon guys when Vervanks was up against the clock, but I tell you real quick. Remember when Ralph Crandon says, I was supposed to play golf with my boss, and Norton says, I address the ball. Hello, ball. How many times?
Well, I'll tell you, Tommy, a lot of the golf carts now have built-in timers in there, and you know, which is great because if you don't keep pace with the time on the timer, they come right out and chase you. I mean, they stop all that stuff of spending, you know, six hours out of the golf course.
Oh, my God, because you look for golf balls, this and that. I always tell the guy, if you can't find a ball, that's why you have balls in the bin or go to Kmart or one of those stores and get 5 hours for a dozen golf balls. because you're gonna lose it anyway. You might as well pay them the $5 and go pay $29 for the good balls, guys. But Frank said, tick, 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 guys.
Get the little kid on the golf course that fishes for the golf balls.
That's
got right.
Get him
in the bag.
Clean up that course.
That's right. Buy them from him.
That's right.
Frank, I just wanted to say one quick thing about the young lady we dedicated the show to.
Yes.
You know, they hit a power line, correct? That balloon.
Yes. Yes.
And when I was driving down 95 last week from Washington to D.C. last Thursday, I had never seen signs across 95 that said power line before.
Right.
And it was like, it wasn't one. I mean, it was like, you know, maybe 100. And,
wow.
And when I read about this, I was thinking, my God, I just hope that it's not something they were doing and that's what caused this with these new power lines that were being put in. Because it was in that area, you know, where the accident happened that I saw this.
Mm. Yeah, Roger,
so
what happened? It was a fundraiser that they had attended. It was a big hot air balloon thing, but it was a fundraiser for the different teams up there.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was they went north and then got a gust of wind that blew them into the power line.
Right.
And then
once they
hit the power lines, the gas exploded.
And they
were tossed to the ground, and I don't know whether they were burned before they. I'm sure they were burned before they hit the ground. But
Frank, you hear a lot of accidents in those hot air balloons. I mean, you know, no matter what part of the country you're in, whether it's wires or trees or whatever, there are an awful lot of accidents come out of those power those balloons.
Yep.
Well, you know, they thought they were going to lose the one from the Philadelphia Zoo, the 6 ABC one, but they were able to get a replacement for. But it's only for this year, so who knows whether in the future they'll ever have that there. And of course, that's been at the zoo for years and years.
Wow, this is unreal. Frank says,
well,
tick, tick, tock.
Have a great week, guys. God bless. Thank you. Frank.
Absolutely. And I hope everything goes well, and keep donating to that USO, boys.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Amen.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Roger, for coming on. Thank you, Doug, for coming on. Mike,
thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime, you know that. And I'd like to thank Coach Lawrence Sandwich for coming on. Roy Cummings, a real good friend of the program, good friend of mine, for coming on. And the lady for that tournament up there, Frank's got all the information about that. So we'll have to get on Mr. Jason Coburn next week or some talk about hockey right now. 2-0, Boston's losing to Montreal. I'd like to thank always our sponsor, Bradford Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. When we're purchasing the water heater, log on to BradfordWhite.com. And also with the Yabby course, 352-588-2016, Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. Give them a call, Tim Baker, 325-588-5454. Storm's home next Saturday night, May 24th, on Laker Reader Appreciation Nights out of Lutz, Florida. Look for their ad in the paper. Frank, always a pleasure. God bless. Have a great, great week, and I'll see you next Saturday night at the Tampa Bay Store game. I'll talk to you during the week, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night. Grateful appreciation of the men and women of police and fire services and men and women of police of the U.S. Air Force, Marines, Navy, and Army, and Coast Guard. These programs are also dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Bainger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PD. Highway Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department. Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department. MIT Officer Sean Collier. Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Deputy Jonathan Scott Payne, Orange County Sheriff's Office. Officer Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department. Highway Patrol Officer Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, my brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time. You may be 10-7 at this time. Until we're 10-10 at the table, Lord, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields. May the sun shine softly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night.
Shem alek ma yelama, Shem ma hezah yelama, Son Hashem nevorat fed, Haku yigegen ma yelama.
Thank you.
Good night, Bob. We miss you. Good night, Frank. We love you.